from Vision Australia Radio. It's time to open the cellar door and uncork a classic on Heard It Through the Grapevine.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm Michael Hintz, the velvety voice of Vino, with another Heard It Through the Grapevine on Vision Australia Radio, and coming to you nationally through the Community Radio Network. And it's hello from my producer, Lloyd Shirley. Today, it's my pleasure to talk to the talented Alex Treskothick, winemaker at Nepenthe at Balhanna in the Adelaide Hills. Alex is crafting some fine Sauvignon Blanc, crisp Chardonnay and elegant Pinot Noir in a rapidly emerging region with a diversity of cool microclimates. Alex, welcome to Grapevine.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me.
You're looking well today, I've got to say. I like that new shirt you've got just for the interview.
Just for the interview.
And no red wine stains on it?
No, it's too early in the morning for that.
Too early in the morning, yes. Now, winemakers are often a tad edgy, I find, and live on the cusp temperamentally and emotionally, in that they are often think themselves only as good as their last vintage, and are continually in search of the holy grail of making the perfect vintage or ultimate wine. Would you say that's so?
I do agree, yes, because you're always judged by your last vintage, and every year's a new challenge, so fully agree.
Yeah, but you seem fairly laid back.
Or is it
underneath that insouciance and air of, laid-back air, is there a real determination there?
Yeah, I suppose I'm fairly focused on what I'm doing. And
yep.
I obviously well aware that I can't control Mother Nature. So sometimes you've just got to take a step back and work with what you've got.
Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoy my job. So I suppose that's probably part of why I'm relaxed, is I'm enjoying what I'm doing.
And it shows, I say, because when I visited last year, I had the pleasure of meeting you, and I was mightily impressed, not only with yourself and your personality and demeanour, but with the consistent quality of your Nepenthe wines, especially your Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. What's your total area under vine at the moment?
We've got 110 hectares under vineyard.
And the dominant varietal planted?
Sauvignon Blanc.
Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah.
And your pristine vineyards, fruit quality and expertise of your also met your viticulturalist, Murray Leek. You obviously make a very good team.
Murray has a lot of experience. So, with his experience, I can find out everything I need to know about each vineyard and each block. And, he's been around for a fair while, and he's been with Nepenthe since the beginning.
Yep.
So, there's a lot of history there just alone with Murray, let alone what I've learnt.
And that continuity is important, especially in a relatively young area like the Adelaide Hills, isn't it?
Oh, it's very important because every season is different. So the more experience you've got to draw on, the better prepared you are for the vintage.
Yes, grape growing, vineyard management and viticulture generally often play second fiddle to winemaking in Australia. We seem to hang off every word of the winemaker. Don't you agree?
We do, yes. We don't give enough acknowledgement to the vineyards. I think you look over to Europe and they talk about their terroir and how important the vineyard is and the soil and the aspect, whereas in Australia sometimes we get a bit caught up with the winemaker rather than how good the viticulture team is. So.
Yes. Now, Alex, you're from one of my favourite parts of the world originally. You're a Strathbogie Rangers boy originally.
Correct, yes.
Yes.
My parents have got vineyards up that way as well.
And do they have a label that they make up there, or do they just sell their grapes to someone else?
Yeah, sell their grapes to some local wineries. And
who do they sell to up there?
Mitchelton used to sell to.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and our dad plays around with a bit of wine.
Does he?
For himself and his friends, so it's more of a retirement hobby these days.
Yep, I was at Mitchelton the other day. You wouldn't recognise it, the money that has been poured into it by Jerry
good
Ryan.
Good for the area. Mm. Yeah,
good for the area. Yep. Mm. Now, you're also a Charles Sturt University winemaking degree graduate, I believe.
Correct, yes. A while ago now.
Yep. When did you graduate?
2006.
Right.
So yeah, great university. It really gets the balance between theoretical and practical.
They made a great sparkling wine from Tumbarumba Fruit up there, I think.
They still do.
Magnificent. Very underrated. And you've worked in the Margaret River, the Barossa, over the road, and, of course, the Hunter Valley before starting. I think you became an assistant winemaker at Nepenthe in, was it 2008?
Yes.
And then moved on from there.
Three years.
Do you still keep in touch with anyone back home at the Strathbogie Ranges?
When I'm back, usually for Christmas, I run into Sam Plunkett a couple of times.
Great guy, Sam, isn't he?
Yeah.
Wines by Sam.
Matt Fowles.
Matt Fowles, yes. Mm. Yep.
So, but
ladies who shoot their lunch.
Nepenthe keeps me fairly busy over here in the Adelaide Hills.
I bet you. Now, tell me, why the Adelaide Hills and why Nepenthe? Now, this takes some thinking, so I'll play a little bit of light thinking music here while you contemplate that question.
Well, Adelaide Hills, for me, goes back before I did winemaking. My mother's family is all from the Adelaide Hills.
Right.
Four generations back. So
yes.
I've had a long connection with Adelaide Hills.
Yep.
Adelaide Hills, also as a region, as far as winemaking goes, is really interesting because it, as you touched on earlier, all the microclimates. So there's so much potential with the different varieties, from Chardonnay through to Grunewittliner, and then...
We'll get around to that. I had a great Grunewittliner while I met you late last year
There's a lot of Grunewittliners sort of popping up now in the hills. And then with reds, we're doing Shiraz, and Pinot Noir and Tempranillo really well. And then lots of little alternative varieties are starting to pop up. So there's so much potential here because of the climate. We've got a nice, healthy rainfall.
Yes.
We get warm days, but not too hot. But then we have the nice cool nights, which is really important for the vineyard. Gives the vines relief from the heat during the day. So,
and what about Nepenthe? Why did you choose to go to Nepenthe? What was the attraction there?
I sort of half fell into the job.
Did you?
By accident, but but I did know a few people out this way, and Nepenthe's always had a very good reputation, and always been one of the leaders in the Adelaide Hills. So that will always tend to attract winemakers to a company if they're doing good things and leading the way. So, I suppose that's a big part of why I ended up working for Nepenthe.
Mm-hmm. What have you learned about Nepenthe and the Adelaide Hills since your arrival?
Well, I've always been a big Chardonnay and Pinot Noir fan.
Right.
But I, to be honest, have learnt a lot more respect for Sauvignon Blanc. I hadn't really worked with much Sauvignon Blanc until I came to the Adelaide Hills. And obviously, Adelaide Hills is regarded as the the best, or if not one of the best regions for Sauvignon Blanc in Australia, and it does it so easily.
You overlook Shaw and Smith, don't you?
Correct.
Your wines are very similar in style, aren't they? In a way.
Yeah. Look, Adelaide Hills has positioned itself as a region with its Sauvignon Blanc, really just focusing on more the premium end. We haven't sort of tried to chase or mimic the Kiwi style.
Yes, and do you think it's about time Sauvignon Blanc was given the respect as a variety it's due, and not just confused with the herbaceous Blancs that have come in waves from New Zealand?
Yeah, look, Australia's been initially educated on more of just a simple Sauvignon Blanc style, whereas Sauvignon Blancs like Chardonnay, you can do a lot with it in regards to fermenting it in oak and lees contact. And
I agree. It's got a much more broader and diverse flavour profile. It's not from one end to the other than people give it credit for.
It's got a good natural acidity, so
yes.
It gives you the backbone to build a really interesting wine if you want to. So.
Now, you've travelled a bit too. You're a bit of a flying winemaker. You've done a vintage at Bailey Vineyards in the Napa, California, of course. In 2010, you were with Stéphane Tissot in the Jura in France, and recently a stint in Germany. Tell me about these.
I think these regions, you can read as much as you like. And it comes back to the theory and the practical.
Mm-hmm.
But going to a region and working in it, you you know, you get to live and breathe the culture in the area, mm-hmm. And you learn so much more about the region. You know, you're seeing the fruit. You're out in the vineyard. You're seeing the fruit coming into the winery, and you're getting to learn from a winemaker who will usually be doing things a lot differently to how you do it. And you know, you learn some really interesting techniques. You learn some things that you probably won't use as well.
So using Germany as a benchmark or an example, you were there recently. What did you learn, and how do you intend applying those learnings at Nepenthe? Was it one thing that stood out, you know, when you came back, coming back on the plane?
Germany, I think one thing they have is, being such a cool climate, they have a beautiful natural acidity in their wines, which sometimes to soften that out, they'll have a higher residual sugar, off dry, because they have such an amazing acidity. But what you see in those wines is when they're 10, 15, 20 years old, they still look really fresh.
And don't they?
Mm. The acidity is the key. So, they're not afraid to pick the fruit a little bit earlier when it's looking good.
Now for this week's Wine of the Week, and it's an Nepenthe Pinnacle 2012 Ithaca Chardonnay, 13% alcohol by volume, screw cap seal. I love this wine. It was rich, nutty, creamy, full of style, redolent with peach, with a hint of nectarine, and a very receptive, toasty oak. Well-balanced, complex. Is that just me, or you take us through? What do you think of the wine, Alex? You're the one who made it. Take us through it.
I'll touch back on the Adelaide Hills.
Yes.
Sauvignon Blanc was what Adelaide Hills was built on, and we do it very well. But Chardonnay is moving forward, will become as equally as important to the Adelaide Hills.
I agree.
Chardonnay out of the hills is amazing fruit. It comes back to a bit like the Riesling. It has a really good natural acidity, but we have so much fruit coming through in the wine.
Mm.
And then that's just in the vineyard. Once we get the fruit into the winery, and then we ferment it through, you know, different... I use a lot of French oak, low toast.
Yes. What oak do you use?
A little company called Chassan. Actually, the same barrel company that when I was in the Jura. So I've been to the cooperage.
Yes.
I met the cooper. Really nice guy.
Yep.
And what it does is it helps build some beautiful structure on the palate, but it doesn't over-dominate the nose with oak.
It doesn't.
You know, if you're trying to make your idea is to make a Chardonnay that has the ability to age and is it's really about expressing the fruit and what the region's good at, then that's the sort of oak I believe you should be trying to use, rather than, you know, big vanilla over the top oak that dominates the wine.
Now, do you think that you're going to your benchmark in Australia going to rival the Margaret River for Chardonnay?
Definitely.
Yep, or even bypass them, perhaps.
I've worked in Margaret River, and they, it's a great region. Seasonal variation is always what makes winemaking so interesting, because you know, one year one region will be amazing, and then the next year another region will sort of step up to the plate. But
do you use similar? What clones do you use for your Chardonnay?
We use quite a cross section. Being Adelaide Hills being a young region, we're still doing a lot of trial work with Bernard clones.
Yes.
And then IV sort of 84 and 26. They're really quite good clones for us.
Because people don't often realise the choice of clone is very, very, very important, isn't it?
A lot of people talk about it with Pinot, but that's where the conversation stops. But with all varieties, clonal choice can be really... really important, depending on what style you're trying to make. So
yes, there's a new guy in the Barossa, I think, Wayne Farquhar at Deluva's, done a lot of work with clones. Certainly worth having a look at.
And on clones, it's a tricky thing, because a certain, hypothetical, we can go to Pinot, 777 clone might work really well on one vineyard.
Yes.
But then on another vineyard, it's the soil type and the aspect might suit the vine, it sort of doesn't perform as well. So it's sort of horses for courses as well.
Yep. Oh, look, I'd love to see your 212 Chardonnay in about 4 to 5 years' time. I think it'll really start to be coming into its own then.
hopefully.
Lovely wine. Now, the Adelaide Hills has traditionally lived in the shadows of its near neighbours, the Barossa in the north, to the north, and, of course, towards the sea, McLaren Vale, to the south. However, as a region, you're rapidly coming of age as a serious cool climate producer of premium wines with a bright future. I think it was Brian Crozer back in the Piccadilly Valley back in 79 that helped in the early days. But why do you think this is so? Why is the Adelaide Hills coming of age?
I think the Adelaide Hills has managed to get off to such a good start because, and the advantages of having larger wine regions just over the fence, so to speak, you've got all that technical experience, which has allowed us to get off to a really good start. So although we're on paper, we've only a wine region that's only been around for sort of 25, 30 years.
Yep.
We've had all that expertise and history from and long before my time, from the neighbouring regions, which has allowed the Adelaide Hills to get off, build strong foundations and get off to a really good start.
Now, we're saying, I think partly because you're talking about, you know, why the Adelaide Hills is coming of age, I think it's partly because the winemakers individually and collectively are starting to understand the nuances of the microclimate diversity and the terroir generally. Would that be a fair question, fair assessment?
Yeah, and a lot of, we have, you know, a big thing that people have really noticing is that we are very much a young winemaking region as far as the winemakers across the board. We haven't sort of got that third, fourth generation winemakers, which, to take nothing away from the other regions, with young winemakers, you're sort of willing to trial a lot more and try new things, and we're not sort of bound by old, you know, mindsets of this is how it has to be done, this is how it's always been done. So I think that's really allowed all the different winemakers through the Adelaide Hills to try new things, and it's really, you know, there's some really interesting wines coming out of the Adelaide Hills because of that.
Yes, yes. Now, speaking of terroir, which we were earlier, where do you think the influence of terroir finishes and creative winemaking commences in the making of a wine?
It's a very objective question, and it depends who you ask. But
yes.
I'm a big believer that, you know, the fruit quality is, it's somewhere up around 80 or 90%
right.
of the final product, because...
Yep.
If you start with great fruit, you have the ability to hopefully make a great wine. But if you start with low quality fruit, you can't. There's lots of different old sayings,
yes,
about turning something that's of lesser quality into something that's higher quality. That's
yep.
sort of the same with grapes. If you start with a lower quality, you're not going to make something that's amazing. It's sort of if it's dilute cordial, it's always going to be dilute cordial.
Yeah, yeah. But in a good year, I suppose it could be said that the winemaker's job is to escort the grape from the vine into the winery, and do very little in a good year. But in a not so good vintage, that's when you're really called on to be a bit creative, and that tests your mettle, doesn't it, as a winemaker?
Correct. They say the difference between a good winemaker and a great winemaker is a good winemaker can make a good wine in a good year, but a great winemaker can make a good wine in a bad year.
Yeah, that's very true, very true. It does seem that you guys are getting much better, a much better feel also for the varieties to plant, where to plant them, and why to plant them generally. Is that so?
Correct, yes.
Your varietal selection and site selection...
Murray Leake, I think, touched on this when you visited.
He did.
Last year, that a lot of Shiraz in the early days in the Adelaide Hills was sort of planted in the shady, cool spots. And we
planted by amateurs. Hmm.
Yeah, sheep farmers. You know,
yeah,
people
sheep
who
farmers,
were,
yeah.
thought, oh, maybe I'll throw some vines in as a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Obviously now, experience and viticulture, especially in the last sort of 20, 30 years, has really become a lot more scientific and a lot more research and a lot more data to work with on where to plant things is sort of coming into the mix. I think a lot more research is done before vines are just put in the ground.
Yes.
So,
yep.
So a lot of those, some of those early vineyards, have been since been removed because they weren't in areas where they were going to perform. But
Look, an obvious... An obvious sign that a region is producing top-quality fruit is when the likes of Wolfie Blass and Penfolds put Adelaide Hills on their top Chardonnay labels.
Correct. There's a lot of interest from the a lot of bigger companies outside the Adelaide Hills now who are, you know, looking to source as much Adelaide Hills fruit as they can to put into their top labels.
So yes, I was up at Rutherglen the other day and bumped into some vine hunters, I call them, from Treasury, who were, you know, still on, despite Treasury's woes. People forget the everyday business goes on, and they were sourcing, looking for good fruit, and so it goes on all the time. However, it's one thing for the big boys to buy grapes in the hills, but the natural limitations of just what you can do with your land, given that you're a water catchment area from Adelaide, that perhaps is one of your greatest guarantees to ensure that you won't become known for producing over-commercialised wines.
Yes, I think it's the... some people may not have realised, but I think it's the thing that will protect the Adelaide Hills and protect the quality and the name, because that stops, prevents people from coming in and planting huge vineyards, which have the potential to become, you know, more commercial and overcrop and drop the overall quality of the region.
I hadn't realised until I visited you, and that caused me to do some research. There are 3,000 hectares of vineyards in the region and more than 50 wine labels, and there are 16 cellar doors, so with more growth planned. So you're, a lot of people mightn't realise that about the Adelaide Hills, because they traditionally think, well, the Adelaide Hills is an afterthought sandwiched between the Barossa and McLaren Vale. Well, that's no longer the case, is it?
No, there's been a lot of... fruit Adelaide, grown in the Adelaide Hills in the last sort of 10 to 15 years. An average vintage for the Adelaide Hills as a whole, not Nepenthe, as Adelaide Hills as a whole, can range sort of between 20,000 to 25,000 tonnes. Mm. We've had a few outliers, but that's sort of our a normal vintage for us, which is, I suppose, I think I'd have to look a bit closer, but I think that runs at around sort of, you know, a third of what, say, the Barossa Valley produces.
Yes,
So, so we're not, we're a bit more than a hatful. We're, we're a serious region. Because we're young, we haven't had that, we don't have 100 years of marketing behind us.
But you'll age gracefully, no doubt.
Correct.
And you can't be in too much of a hurry to get there, because sometimes when you get there, you find that you're not where you want to be.
No, and that's one thing. As a winemaker, you get one shot to make the wine each year, so it teaches you to be patient.
Well, speaking of that, how many vintages have you done in your time as a winemaker, full stop, and how many at Nepenthe, and what have you learnt about yourself in the process from when you started out to today?
I think I touched on it a bit earlier before in regards to whatever. One thing I've learnt from doing a few vintages is that you can't control Mother Nature, so there's no point in getting too stressed about things that are a long way out of your control. You have to, you've got to get in the vineyards and taste and pick when the fruit tastes, its best. As far as vintages, I don't keep a running record of how many I've done, but I've done 8 now with Nepenthe. And then you throw in a few around the country and then a few overseas. I think I'm somewhere up around the 16 or 17 vintages.
So. Feeling as though you're starting to get on top of Pinot Noir now?
Yeah.
Takes a while, doesn't it?
It does take a while with Pinot. You're forever learning, I think, as a winemaker. But definitely with Pinot, yes.
Yep. Now, aside from Sauv Blanc, Chardonnay, Shiraz and Pinot Noir, you're starting to experiment with Grüner Veltliner and Tempranillo, I believe. Anything else on the horizon?
I had a little bit of a play with Viognier.
Oh, yes, you did a Shiraz Viognier, didn't you?
Yeah, and I've done a straight Viognier.
And a straight Viognier in 2010, wasn't it?
Yes, for the and I've done another one this year.
Oh, have you? Yes. Forward? Yep.
Yeah. Always trying to keep things interesting in cellar door, and you learn from playing, trialing different varieties. You as a winemaker, you learn more about your region and what it can do and what it can't do. So,
I liked your first Grüner, New Oak. Were you pleased with the result?
Yeah,
for a first up effort.
Yeah, look, I think Grüner, because it's such a new variety to Australia. Obviously, it's been in Austria for hundreds of years, but for Australia, it's still very new. I think everyone's still sort of is unsure which way to go with the style. So
yep.
And it comes back to that thing with Adelaide Hills where there's sort of, there is no set rules. So you can have a play with and make a style that you feel looks the best for the variety. So, I really like to sort of build more texture into and more palate weight into a wine because I think wine should, you should be drinking wine and eating food and they should be working well together. So
exactly.
That's the style I've gone for. Some of the other producers have gone for more the Riesling style, which, there's some, they get some really beautiful floral aromatics in their wines.
Yep.
But, that's what makes it interesting with wine.
And we're almost out of time, but I've got to get a couple of quick questions in. You're getting serious about Pinot Gris too, aren't you?
Pinot Gris, definitely. It's sort of the quiet achiever in the Adelaide Hills. No one's.
I think it is.
Talked about it, but from what I've heard this year, we're, as a region, we're short. Because supply and demand is it's good. It's good for the Adelaide Hills if we're in that sort of position.
Yep. So. And do you think Zinfandel has a future in the Adelaide Hills?
Although we grow a little bit of Zinfandel, Zinfandel needs a lot of heat.
Yes.
To get right. I learnt that when I was in California. It's a lot warmer over there.
Yep.
I think there's probably other varieties that will. Do better than Zinfandel. Be more consistent. Zinfandel, we can make a very good wine in a warm year.
Yeah.
But we're not looking for warm years in Adelaide Hills. I'd prefer cooler vintages.
No.
So,
well, Alex,
maybe not.
Thank you very much for your time today. It was a real pleasure talking to you, and I very much enjoyed meeting you, and I've learned a hell of a lot, not only about Nepenthe, but the Adelaide Hills through the experience. And thank you very much for your time today.
No, thank you for having me, Michael, and more than welcome to drop by the Adelaide Hills whenever you're in
love
town.
To. Thank you very much, Alex. Just hold on there and I'll be back in a moment. My research material was sourced from my home library, winebiz.com and nepenthe.com.au. This has been another Herded Through the Grapevine on Vision Australia Radio, heard on stations all around Australia via the Community Radio Network. It's cheers from me, Michael Hintz, and please drink moderately.